Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Last Ring. I am Brad Sams, the executive editor of Petri and Therat.com, and the person standing next to me is the guy that puts the Therat, unfortunately, into Therat.com.
Thank you very much.
And so what we're going to do here is we're going to kind of recap a couple days of information, going to dive into Windows 10 a little bit. We are going to play with Nerf guns, we're going to play with little figurines, and we're going to have a lot of fun.
Got it.
He made it 2 minutes.
Brad, Before we continue, The Last Ring, what does that mean?
The Last Ring. So The Last Ring is a little bit of a play on the Fast Ring and the Slow Ring. So if you're not familiar with Microsoft and how their Insider program works, they have, well, now they have three distinctive rings. They just introduced one not long ago.
I'm listening.
But the Last Ring is supposed to be, this is the last event of the day, the last session. And so we're kind of bringing it home. Not quite a keynote, but more of a recap, commentary, and general tomfoolery that we do every day on our sites.
Right. Sorry.
So kicking it off here, I will talk about day one. And it's really all about your career as an IT pro. The IT pro, it's really becoming an interesting segment in the business, right? Many, many years ago, you were just that guy who actually pushed the buttons, pushed the card in, and made sure that the balance sheets actually balanced when the accountants said they did. But it's really not that anymore. And staying educated and ahead of the curve and adapting to the change is all part of the expectation of being an IT pro these days. No longer can you just say, you know what, I just run updates, I install Adobe Flash or Reader, and be done with it. You really, really got to be on top of your game. And so that's part of the career as an IT pro. It's no longer just a stagnant position. Education is key, such as these types of events.
Right.
And going to items such as Build and other things that Microsoft puts on to make sure that you're really on the leading edge. Because if you're not on the leading edge, you open up your organization to weaknesses, vulnerabilities, and frankly, you're not getting the productivity for the software that you're paying
making for. Decisions for you instead of for your company.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you catch Jeffrey Snover's talk on day one? It was basically about this topic. And it was just some great advice.
Yeah.
He was talking about special Snowflake servers and, you know, doing just really basically about just always learning and moving forward.
And if you didn't catch that, all these sessions are on replay. And many of you likely know Snover. I really highly recommend, as Paul points out, that's an excellent session to really kind of get you reinvigorated in your career and just to make sure that you're abreast of what's going on. And heck, you know, drop his name when you're going up to your boss and saying, I need some more money for education.
Right.
Well, Jeffrey Snover said so.
He's like Mark Rozinovich, except he invented PowerShell.
Do you even know what PowerShell is, Paul?
A little bit.
Thought so. And security. Security is what...
Sorry.
Security, not like the Nerf gun that Paul is using, is one of these evergreen topics. Security is always on the forefront, and pretty much people don't think about security outside of IT until it's too late. And so security is something you have to be aware of so that you're always aware of the new threats, but also, like the Nerf gun here, which is ancient history, being aware of the old, much like Paul is too. Paul is always aware of the old things. And as Paul alluded to, IT is now leading the business. While not every company is a software or development-driven company, IT is the one that makes things happen. If email is down, if your ERP solution is offline, if people can't connect to the network, your business is at a standstill. The IT community is now the driver of the business. So if you're not pushing forward at all times with either updates, new, you know, rolling up to Windows 10, getting new software, or deploying new features, your company is at a productivity standstill. And this is why the IT pro has become such an important part of every organization. If you're not on the leading edge, then you're losing technical advantage to your competitors. So the IT pro is critical to every company on this planet going forward.
Wow.
Yeah.
Brad, would you be my slide wench?
Maybe. Maybe if you give me one of your toys.
Oh, I'm going to give you one of the toys. So, day two, which was today's day, was the longer of the 2 days so far, a lot longer. Focused first on identity and security. You can move it along. I want to hop down to the bottom. I mean, this has been a long, long day. It's been a really interesting day, Simon and friends and so forth. I think the thing that really resonated for me on day two was the EMS stuff. Because when you think about mobile device management, it really started with just the devices, applying policy to devices and so forth. And the kind of differences between traditional management models that we saw with PCs, Active Directory, Group Policy, System Center, and so forth, and then these more modern types of mobile device management. And with Windows 10 in particular, we're really seeing a blending of that stuff where you can mix and match, you can choose one or the other based on the device type, based on the user group, and so forth. And EMS really extends MDM past just that device management to include things like identity, data, and also apps, which is That's super exciting.
And it's really interesting, too, especially I think we're going to see over the next 5 years, maybe even a little bit shorter, is the mobile phone space and the mobile space in general is really becoming your office. It used to be this picture of a guy sitting in the back of his car with a laptop and a Bluetooth modem and all that good stuff. But really now, it's just that guy heads down, pounding into his phone, and he has sensitive data on there. He has sensitive contacts. And so making sure those devices are really locked down and secure, because that is probably one of the higher threats to corporate data integrity.
Sure. And for companies of all types, right? I mean, from the biggest organizations that have all kinds of staff on hand for that type of thing, down to the smallest organizations that are going to be unmanaged in some cases or loosely managed,
right?
And everything in between.
Yeah. So it's the mobile segment is one to watch. I think it's going to be a key differentiator of how people manage these devices going forward to make sure that their companies don't have data loss once these devices are out. I mean, you see it all the time. They get lost on the subway or whatnot.
The iPhone in the bar?
Perfect example.
Yeah.
So, all good stuff. So let's take a look at Windows 10 today.
Where is Windows 10 today, Brad?
Probably next to Carmen Sandiego. But Windows 10, and Paul, we were talking about this earlier, the momentum behind Windows 10, and I think the key here is that there is momentum.
A huge momentum.
It's huge. So Microsoft has announced 200 million devices running the operating system, and 22 million are in the enterprise or education sector.
Huge.
It really is huge because...
Well, for two reasons. I mean, first of all, just for the 200 million figure, a lot of those are upgrades. And historically with Windows, upgrades aren't where the new installs came from up front, right? It was new PC purchases. It was not people taking the software and upgrading an existing computer.
Right.
And so that's actually been a fairly difficult task, especially for consumers.
Yeah.
And that's something that's happening in mass. And then the 22 million figure, of course, you know, businesses typically move more slowly.
And one of the things I think you pointed out a couple of days ago is where was Windows 8 in this life cycle?
Right.
That's where I think the momentum is key. As you talk to people, there's a very active conversation about rolling up to Windows 10, deploying Windows 10, and testing Windows 10.
Not to dump on Windows 8, but what the heck? We don't work for Microsoft.
Yeah, why not?
it addressed a very specific problem, but I think it left a lot of users on traditional machines, and there were, you know, 1.5 billion of them, a little bit stranded, right? With the kind of touch-first UI. And so obviously some of the changes in Windows 10 were made to address that and make it more applicable to all users.
Yeah, no. And meanwhile, if you guys have any questions or anything, please go ahead and ask them. They do pop up on a screen, as Alan says, he loves us.
Nice.
Which I don't even know if our wives will say that after this.
Yep. Mostly Paul, I would imagine. Okay, slide.
So who's using Windows 10, Paul? Just you.
Who isn't using Windows 10, Brad?
I think that's...
Well, there was the recent announcement about the Department of Defense. Huge governmental install, I think several million seats.
Yeah, 4 million-ish.
And very aggressively, right?
Yes.
They're going to be doing it within 1 year. And this really speaks to just how amazing Windows 10 is for users, but also on the back end for the people that need to implement it and roll it out to multiple machines. Incredible.
Yeah, I think we get a question we get a lot of time, and especially in the inbox, is people want to know success stories, but not even just the success part. They want to know the pain points. And we're going to see a lot of things come out of this Department of Defense because they're more public facing. Even though they are the defense, they're saying, hey, we're going to go to Windows 10. So keep an eye on what they're doing, especially in about a year from now. We'll see if they fully complete that transition. But knowing other people who are currently adopting this platform, I don't foresee it being nearly as hard as when people went from, let's say, XP to 7. That was much more difficult than what these guys are trying to do.
Right. And again, it's just a constant improvement of the stack to make it easier across the board, not just for consumers, but for everybody.
Yeah. And one of the other new things that is in Windows 10 this year, and it's also a business feature as well, is the App Store. Right. So if you're a developer trying to think about, hey, where am I going to build my apps? Microsoft obviously has a nice suite of tools. They just acquired some software.
They did. Small company.
Little company.
Yeah, you might have heard.
To make it easier to build your apps. And so the App Store is seeing more visibility. Microsoft, I think, announced last week they're doing more changes to make app discoverability even easier.
Sure.
And so I think at Build this year, I don't know what you've heard, but I think the Universal Windows Platform is going to be a hot topic.
Yeah.
At least we all hope it is, because I think it's...
They have bridges in place that will bring forward apps from other platforms, from Win32, from the web. And that's a way to get apps that really are, maybe they're LOB apps or legacy apps, inside of companies that are never really going to be upgraded to Universal, can still come forward into this platform and still work with modern devices. And then for the developer or for the places that do want to upgrade apps or write new apps, obviously Microsoft wants them to target the Universal platform, and there are great reasons to do that.
Yeah, and I'm really looking forward to see how Terry and his crew actually take Universal apps, what we know today, and unleashing more power into them and giving us more API access and giving us more features so that those developers can do that.
How much do you think that camera costs?
I don't know, we can probably find out. So let's talk about a little bit here, Windows 10 at your workplace. Mm-hmm. And when I say your workplace.
I understand.
Yeah, we're not.
This is the global you.
This is the global you, the not exactly you. Your office where,
sure. Yeah. Yep, lots of underwear and not lots of clothes, yep.
So a couple of security features I think that are big here. What have you heard about people using Windows Hello?
Well, so Windows Hello, just to be clear, is the biometric sign-in that will hopefully one day be, you know, the step toward removing passwords completely. But it's basically a way to sign into your computer using a camera, using an iris scanner, using a finger scanner. And it's basically just enabling next-generation security. And then in tandem with Windows Passport, mm-hmm. allow those credentials to carry through to web services, to applications, and so forth. And so, you know, this is part of that why you upgrade to Windows 10 story.
Right.
Better security across the board, multiple device types, just a win across the board.
And one thing I would caution you against when you're using Windows Hello, you're going to see your face. Like you open this thing up and it scans your face and it gives you a nice pretty picture, unless you're like me who is just like feverishly ripping this stuff open and it looked like something out of Jumanji when it snapped the photo for my Windows Hello.
Yep.
So just be aware about
the
that.
The paranormal activity of you.
Yes. Yeah. And what about the Advanced Defender that they announced last week? What's going on there?
Yeah, so this past week, Microsoft announced a new service, called Windows Defender Advanced Threat Protection. It's coming to Windows 10 for businesses. It's going to be part of Windows 10. It's not clear yet if it's just Windows 10 Enterprise, Windows 10 Pro, we're not really sure. But basically a way for a networked environment, a managed network environment, to detect threats that have already occurred that are in the network using behavioral
means.
That's
fascinating.
Yeah, so things like social networking, social attacks or zero-day attacks, like things that have already occurred. And Microsoft said in the blog post when they announced it that there are some businesses that have adopted this early adopter program, and they discovered they had threats in-house that they didn't even know about.
And one of the interesting things that I really like about this is when we think of software protections, it's usually a proactive approach, right? We're trying to get ahead, and that's where the focus has been.
Yep.
And this is more of a reactive. So it works nicely with products that you may already have. So you think you've got the best protection, and now you've got something on the back end saying, hey, yeah, you actually do, or nope, you really need to go.
Spoofing your network, pretending they're an admin level user. I think Terry Myerson said that there was an average of 200 days before a threat was detected that was already embedded inside of a managed network. And so they're trying to bring that down to as close to zero as possible.
And the number of times my social security number has been stolen, I firmly believe that is accurate. I mean, we see data breaches all the time. So this is just one more tool that you can put into the tool bag to keep management off your back for when you have a data breach, or in this case, hopefully do not have a data breach. So updates, one of my favorite things about Windows 10, especially on the enterprise side, is the Windows Update for Business. I used to work in the finance industry for a while, and everybody knows at the end of the month, the accountants are cramming to get month-end close. Management is saying, get that stuff done, and it's great. You're pounding out your spreadsheets, and then it says Windows needs to update, and you flip your table over, and it's game over, because you know you're out for a little bit of time. One of the nice things about Windows Update for Business, the IT pro, if he likes you, can... It's true. If he doesn't like you, then he'll update you
month
end.
It's possible.
Right, but they can now dictate when the updates are going to be pushed out to which machines within the network. I think that's a really big feature that users will never really truly they'll probably understand it, but never appreciate, right?
Sure.
And so Windows Update for Business, big, big fan of that. And we also have servicing branches, too. Obviously, you know.
New to Windows 10.
New to Windows 10, perfect. Right. And what servicing branch you are using is going to depend on your network and your demand needs. But now you at least have options for long-term, short-term, on-the-fly updates. So Windows 10 in the workplace, there's a lot of good stuff that Microsoft has actually introduced here.
Yep.
And I hope your machine gets updated every time you're on GoGo Wi-Fi.
That's happened. So what do we got here? I got to read this one. Everything runs Windows 10. So this is, it's really been more of an evolution than a brand new thing with Windows 10. But it's fair to say that with Windows 10, Microsoft is targeting a huge number of platforms with this release. So it's not just PCs and tablets, phones, right?
Mm-hmm.
HoloLens, mixed reality headset. We have the Surface Hub conferencing solution, Xbox One video game console, Internet of Things devices.
Yep.
Kind of goes on and on, and it's not just in name, it's not just the window, we're slapping Windows on a name of a product and putting it on other things. It's about having that same app platform underneath all of them, right?
Right.
So you can run the same apps. And as a developer, you could come in and know that your app can work across, you know, phone, tablet, PC, and these other device types. Very exciting.
And I think it's that that last point that's really, really pivotal with what Microsoft is now doing. It's that write once and deploy on everything, especially because now you write your same code base. You know, you have to do the interface components to an extent.
Sure.
But you can put it on anything from the Xbox to the phone to the desktop, tablet.
Yeah. And that stuff's gotten a lot easier, too, by the way. I mean, they have... Yep. Auto-scaling UIs that will, you know, handle when you turn a tablet around or if you run it on a smaller screen device and so forth. And we don't want to look too far ahead, but with the Xamarin acquisition, the potential ability to target iOS and Android devices as well.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be really key for the developer, too. I think everybody universally agrees that acquisition made a lot of sense.
I've been waiting for this for years and years.
I think everybody has been waiting for this one. Yeah. So I think it's a really smart play for Microsoft to get more developers onto their platforms, and then they can target just about everything out on the market from one code, you know, one code base, one application. Really smart move by Microsoft.
Yep.
So we're going to take things down a notch here.
Just in case you thought it couldn't go any further down.
We're pretty good at hitting the bottom at Petri and Throb.
Yep.
So we're going to talk about our top 10 things you should know about Windows IT, or that the IT should know, if I could read my own slides.
Sure. About Windows 10.
Or Windows 10.
About Windows 10.
So as we kind of talked about, updates at your speed. I think I can't stress enough how much I like this, especially from a corporate perspective. It really puts the IT pro in control of their network. It gives them more granular management of the machines, and it helps get people off their back at the end of the day, right?
Well, it's important too, because with Windows 10, Microsoft is moving into a security model where the OS is constantly upgraded.
Right.
Because they want it to have the latest, you know, security controls, the latest updates and so forth. And they're, historically, with a lot of larger enterprises in particular, they've kind of held back on updates. And so Microsoft is providing a choice, and that's the branches you talked about earlier.
Right.
The ability for them to choose the schedule at which updates are applied. And so some businesses may decide to stay on the July 2015 version of Windows 10. Yep. Some may move forward to 15.11, which came out late last year. They have choices as far as that. It's not you don't have to just jump on the bandwagon. They want Windows 10 to go down as easy as possible for any type of company.
And I think that's fantastic.
So number 9 is management your way. And so again, this is much like the first one. It's really all about choice. And it speaks to that EMS, MDM stuff I was talking about before. A lot of traditional enterprises use Active Directory, Group Policy, System Center, Windows Server, obviously, to manage computers.
Yep.
But we have different kinds of workforces now. There are modern agile businesses that are startups, and they only have mobile devices. And they come from a loosely managed world. They're going to use MDM. They're going to use EMS. They're going to use Windows Intune, that type of thing. But then you have other needs and other kind of complex environments where they might do some of both. You know, you might have a certain part of the workforce that's out in the world and they have mobile devices and you want to use Intune or EMS to handle that stuff. But for the machines that are back in the office that are traditional kind of desktop computers, maybe use Active Directory and Group Policy in the traditional
Certainly.
Things.
Certainly. One other thing that's worth pointing out with these first two items, it's about giving you more choice.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, Microsoft is kind of breaking apart what they do.
They're not forcing you down a certain path.
Exactly. So you now have multiple options about how you manage, multiple options about how you update, and multiple options how you get shot by a Nerf gun by your coworker.
It's been too long, Brad.
It probably has.
Sorry.
Despicable. So number 8 is it's not Windows 8.
Right. Which
I think we all understand why.
Yeah. So let's move on.
Yep. I'm just going to move on.
This is for the users, and so one of the really neat things about Windows 10, unlike Windows 8, frankly, is that it's a familiar environment for everyone. So if you're coming at it from a traditional computer, laptop type machine, desktop computer, a non-touch computer, it's going to work the way you're comfortable with. It's going to have a start menu. It works very well with a mouse and a keyboard. It's that traditional desktop environment that you kind of know and love. If you were a fan of Windows 8's touch controls, you use it on a tablet or any other kind of touch machine, and those people are absolutely out there.
Yeah,
Windows 10 offers a tablet mode, and it works, obviously works with touch regardless, but it changes the UI to make it more efficient on that type of device. And so it kind of works the way you want it to. And that's I think, one of the very coolest things about Windows 10, I think.
Yeah, and I think you hit it spot on. There's also a lot of awesome features, too. One of my favorite things that I don't really think about until I need it is when I travel, I obviously can't bring two monitors with me. At home, I have a multi-mon setup.
Right.
Virtual desktops.
Yep.
You know, they're built in. Windows XP had some stuff, and we've seen things floating around, but they are now built in with Windows 10. Every version has it. You get multiple desktops. It's great. I put my Spotify on one, TweetDeck on another, and what I'm writing right in the middle. And so I can just ping it around. Yeah. We also have, what, Cortana?
Yeah, but a lot of it's the kind of finishing the story from Windows 8, right? So
yeah,
Windows
perfect.
8 had the modern app platform, and now we have the universal app platform where apps can run full screen or not full screen. They can run like normal apps. Mm-hmm. Snap Assist. You know, Snap was a great feature actually from Windows 7, but the Windows 8 version of Snap could only snap modern apps next to the desktop. You couldn't snap desktop apps specifically. Now everything snaps, and you get assistance on Snap, so you can choose what else to snap next.
And I think that Snap Assist is great. Yeah. You know, you drag your window, gives you everything you need.
It's exactly what you want from technology when you think about it, because you don't really ever think that you need it, but then when it appears, you're like, nice.
Yeah,
you
know, it's a delighter is really what it is.
It is like, really nice.
Oh, that's fantastic. Live tiles in the start menu, which I think was a good spot for them.
Sure.
Microsoft was trying to figure out what to do, and so they modernized the start menu. So it's great. I use mine like widgets. I have like my weather, my sports, my breaking news, all in the biggest tiles possible. Not something that I need every second of the day, but when I hit that start menu and it pops up, it's like, oh, I can read, you know, the headlines of the day, figure out how bad my Reds are losing or that the Bengals are not making it into the playoffs for another year, or winning a playoff game, I should say. But you know what? That information is right at my fingertips, no matter how depressing it may be.
Well, at least the Bengals are consistent. Okay.
Can I have to see the gun, please?
And then, you know, Secure by Design. I mean, no surprise. Microsoft has been talking about Secure by Design since probably Trustworthy Computing in 2002, 2003, but which with each iteration of Windows obviously gets more and more secure. And this is part of the deal with wanting to get everybody, not just businesses, but consumers, onto the Windows 10 platform as quickly as possible, because this thing is Secure by Design and is designed to address the threats that we have today.
Exactly.
You know, Windows 7 is a solid operating system. No one is saying that it isn't, but it was designed almost 10 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
And it really just came into a world that was very different than today's hyper-connected world.
Yeah.
So you need that kind of modern underpinning.
And the nice thing about Secure by Design with Windows 10, it's an ongoing design process, right? We now we're moving into the stage of Windows as a service, which isn't always a premium thing, but it's just from an update, a modern architecture perspective, so that they can adapt the OS as the world evolves. Unlike Windows 7, which was, the code base was written and cemented, this is much more nimble.
The Windows NT code base is almost 25 years old, and that they can update this thing and keep it secure as if it were a small mobile OS is actually kind of astonishing.
Number four is my personal favorite, SFC Scan Now.
Please explain.
So if you're not familiar with this phrase, you've probably never ventured into the Microsoft Answer forums. But realistically, what this is, anytime you have a problem and you post, Microsoft's first response, almost as a given, is SFC Scan Now. And really what this is... Really what this is the...
Is this a placebo? Is this something that does nothing?
They believe it does something. This is akin to the modern day, turn it off and turn it back on again.
Yep.
This is their favorite phrase. I've actually
got... like when you call the cable company, and instead of actually stepping through their flowchart-based help routine, you're playing a video game waiting for it to end because you already know that it doesn't work.
But that's funny. They just never answer for me. It just calls and rings and rings and rings.
Oh, this is another big part of the whole Windows 10 journey. When you think about this system that's constantly updating and is personal and familiar and all that, Microsoft wants their customers to be happy with Windows 10. So Windows feedback is built into Windows 10. If you see something that's wrong or you want something changed, you can go into a system where it publicly logs all of the feedback that Microsoft has gotten. You can upvote things that are already in there. If you actually have a new concern, you can put it into the system and you can influence how... the quality of Windows 10 improves over time.
Yeah, no, I think this is really, really important. I mean, this is the third item on here that Microsoft gives you more control, and now they're listening so that they kind of play off each other. And it's really good to see from Microsoft, because you think about it, they own the desktop, right? They've got over 90% market share, and now they're going to be really transparent for the most part about how these things operate. And the best part is, as we alluded to here, is that you can participate in the Insider Release Program. So if you're not familiar with this, although I suspect most of you are, there's two key rings. There's the fast ring, and then the slow ring, and then there's also an early update ring. But the fast ring is a fascinating place to live that we've really never been able to play before, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
This is what we've always wanted, right?
Pretty much.
Even if you're on a Microsoft beta, you're thinking, well, what I really want is what they see at Microsoft. I'm willing to forego a little bit of quality because I want access to this new functionality faster. And for a certain percentage of the population, not just tech enthusiasts, but people inside of organizations that want to see what's coming next.
Yep.
This is a key capability. It's incredible that this is available.
And it's credit to Gabe and his team. They made a promise that starting this, what was it, January 1, they were going to start shipping builds faster.
Yep, and oh boy.
Oh yeah. You know, we always we want builds every day, but it seems like I'm installing them a lot. And it's not a complaint. I think it's fantastic, but now you can be a little bit more precise about what updates you want to run.
Right, and they have different branches. You don't have to get the fast ring branches that come out basically every week. Sometimes, I think it's basically more than once a week at this point.
Yeah, it's, I mean, when you combine the Insider for mobile and the desktop, it's, you have more updates than your heart can desire.
I am more up to date than I ever needed to be.
And it always happens on a plane.
Yep.
Which I do not recommend downloading a new build over GoGo Wi-Fi. It is possible because I have tried, and I got many scowling looks from everybody trying to figure out why they couldn't
do Netflix.
Yes, why they couldn't do the other things they're not supposed to do.
Sure.
And number one here, and then we'll get to a couple questions that you guys have asked.
Sorry, folks. Brad Sams.
No, it's something happened.
Okay, but to be fair to Microsoft, so this is a goofy error message that you see when something happens.
When an app crashes or can't fetch data.
Prior to Windows 10, I think it's fair to say that many Windows error messages were fairly technical or esoteric.
Right.
And they're trying to make things friendlier and more descriptive and so forth. And in this case, there's not a lot of description going on, but it is friendlier. It's sort of like the little smiley face we see now on the blue screen. So
it's a happy accident.
Yeah. If you don't like it, there's a Windows feedback app.
you can let them know. So we got two questions today. If you have any more, please fire them away. It says, what is your personal favorite new Windows 10 feature?
Oh, boy.
Is it that I can harass you more often?
Yep. This is kind of goofy, but I really like the Groove app in Windows 10.
Okay.
And because literally in Windows 8, there were no modern apps in that case that I was really that interested in. And I like that the inbox apps in this case, you know, Mail and Calendar, for example, Groove.
Yep.
Edge, the Windows Store, are all on a new level. I mean, I happen to subscribe to the Groove Music Pass. It's something I use, and so I use it on phone and I use it on the PC.
Yeah, and I'm going to kind of echo it with more features. So the one thing I really like about Windows 10, and you probably go through this too, Paul, is that it's very easy to get up and running. Right, you log in with your Microsoft account, it pulls down all your Outlook stuff, all of my email apps. I use the email, the Mail, and the Calendar app. That's all that I use. And I can get on a new machine up and running within 10 minutes.
Right.
You know, you pull it out of the box and it's just working.
Yeah.
And that's kind of.
So this is OneDrive data sync.
Yeah.
You know, setting sync, obviously.
Yep. Background sync.
Yep.
Everything just kind of happens.
Yeah.
And at one point, I thought I missed it. I missed the tinkering, right? You set up a new machine, you get to play around, get all the settings just right. But now you don't have to. Granted, you can still go back and do whatever you need to do.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, in many ways, one of the neatest things about Windows 10 isn't so much a specific feature. It is that familiar thing that we talked about earlier, that you're able to tailor it to however you want. We talked about tablet mode and start menu and desktop mode and all that. Mm-hmm. If you're a desktop user and you like that full screen start experience, guess what? You can do that in Windows 10. I just think the choice stuff is so neat in Windows 10.
Right, and one of the big differences, I think, between Windows 8 and Windows 10 is that you have the choice, right? It's not forced upon you. You're not forced to give up certain features that you didn't like or you did like. It's very nimble to what you need.
Okay.
So last question here is, where do you see Windows 10 in 5 years?
Well, Windows 15, as we'll call it. I think you're going to see an expansion of what we already see in Windows 10 today.
Certainly.
I mean, more hardware platforms, spread out to more and more of our lives. That kind of syncing we were just talking about, the ability to turn on a phone and have that stuff come down is really exciting. The ability to sit down in front of your TV and have that stuff come down could be very exciting in the future. I think I'm going to have to find the person behind the teleprompter and find out what's going on over there. I just think it's really that kind of Windows everywhere vision.
I personally think we're going to start to see a more lightweight version of Windows, that it's going to be more tailored to the machine that you're on, so that actually the footprint of the OS is less invasive.
There you go.
And and that they're just going to streamline it. They're going to know what your machine is before they put the update.
Kind of apply the nano server / Windows server principles down to the desktop. Just so I can address the last question. I'm already married, so sorry.
Yes. And to end up our debauchery of a session here.
Yep.
Looking forward to day 3. As you can see, the items that are coming up. My personal favorite is actually Azure Stack. I think this is a great technology. They're taking their billions of dollars investment in the cloud, and they're bringing it down to the local data center. Now, you need to be kind of set up for that. But Azure Stack is kind of the big one that I'm looking forward to tomorrow.
Sorry, buddy.
Yep, initiation.
Wow.
I was going to say, that's two shots, right?
That's going to cause a bruise. That's
Welcome.
Yeah. Welcome, Simon. Welcome to...
Hey, thank you guys for wrapping up the day for us. It's been a pretty great day. We've seen quite a lot of different things. Yep. We've gone through some of the cool security features that are inside of Windows 10. We've gone through a lot of the management. Mm-hmm. One of the things we haven't spent a lot of time talking about today, though, is actually the devices.
Certainly.
And I thought I would give you guys one of those questions up quite nice and early. What are your favorite devices? See, you've got a Surface Book.
Yeah.
You know, this is going to sound kind of odd, but my favorite thing that I don't think gets much attention that came out of the October 6th event, I really like the type cover for the Surface Pro 4.
Especially the one with the fingerprint reader
on
it.
Yeah.
That, like, I type on this thing quite a bit. Obviously, you can see I like the Surface Book, nothing wrong against it. But I'll go home and I have that, the Pro 4 is what I use, the Insider Fast Ring on. And I pull that thing out and I start typing on that keyboard and like...
It's really nice.
It's like, man, like, I really want this keyboard in other places. That is probably one of the quiet pieces of hardware that from Microsoft that I really like.
And honestly, this is a near perfect hardware device for me because of the big screen and all that. And I agree with you 100% on the type coverage. It's an interesting
thing. First, by the way. Let's note that.
Oh, was that recorded? the Surface Book is just amazing. You know? Every once in a while, a device comes out where you feel like, oh, they made this for me. You know, like this is just for me.
It's it is actually quite funny you say that because I was one of the folks that was trialing this internally for a while.
Yeah.
And we did keep asking ourselves, is Paul going to like this device?
Nice.
It was one of the things that we just kept thinking.
If I could take back that shot, I would.
Yeah. It was it's kind of still stinging.
Dead to me, Paul.
But it's an amazing device. It's built so that it really is great to type on. And I don't think people realize
The keyboard's
that.
Fantastic.
The trackpad, too.
The trackpad.
Yes. I still remember from my review, right, when it went out, no matter anything else, when I pulled this thing out of the box and I started to use it just to set, I was like, this trackpad is very responsive. It works well. The gesture input, I think, is what set it apart from everything else that I had used at that point.
Sure.
Three fingers up, it's like, wow, it works every single time.
Are we restricted to only talking about Microsoft devices?
No.
I mean, obviously, the X1 Carbon line is incredible. Mm-hmm. All these in the fingerprint reader, the trackpad actually is very good as well.
Yeah, definitely. The thing I like about the new X1 is the fact that you can bend it all the way back and the keys retract. That's just,
I know,
lovely with that.
Smart.
So we had some other questions. Apparently, the guys out there have asked me to convey the
message.
To
rein it in?
Not to rein it in. To convey the message that apparently the marriage proposal was real.
I really am already married.
Paul, I can't be your best man. I'm already on vacation that week.
We have had some great photographs that have been sent in. Maybe that proposal was...
Some photographs?
Yeah.
Yikes. Okay, we'll have to do that one offline.
Yeah, that was very strange. Let's go in with one of these questions here from Joel. Have you used Windows 10 in a virtual...
What is that?
Desktop. And a worksite.
What is this technical term?
DT. Yeah, I'm guessing it's virtual desktop. Guessing not at this point.
No.
Okay.
Not for a work environment.
So let's dive past that question on what are the biggest differences between upgrading from Windows 7 and 8 and Windows 10?
Well, you get the nice spinny circle.
You do. That's true.
You have the new interface from updating.
Yeah. I think probably the biggest thing there is that you don't need to do the rip and replace upgrade option.
Right.
Assuming that everything, if all the stars have aligned, if you've got a newer device that's running UEFI, that the partition structure is the same, then you probably have a good kind of situation.
From a user experience standpoint, I mean, obviously, technology is sometimes left by the wayside, and so there are different things. I think Windows 7 still had the gadgets in that platform, I think, the sidebar and all that. Windows 8 obviously had Media Center. You know, those things are no longer available, so... You'll be apprised of all this stuff.
Yeah.
One other thing I think that's at least worth pointing out, at least from back in the days of like XP and whatnot, there used to be that mantra of if you're going to go from XP and upgrade, you just do a clean install.
Oh, yeah.
You can't do an in-place upgrade. That, I have not done a clean install, I can't remember, in many years.
I keep sort of replacing what I think is the most amazing thing about Windows 10. It's kind of goofy, but seriously, you can't highlight enough the fact that upgrades happen successfully and reliably across the board, multiple OS versions, is astonishing because that was always a huge pain point. And that is that's what corporations would do. Of course they'd wipe and replace, and they would still, of course, but the fact that you can hand this upgrade to a normal human being and have this thing occur overnight in some cases or whatever where they don't even have to go hands-on with it and you wake up and you have a new version of Windows on there. It's incredible.
Yeah, yep. It is pretty amazing. That brings us to the end of the TechNet Virtual Conference on day two. And mm-hmm. We want to say thank you very much to all of our sponsors that have been taking the content, helping to syndicate it to Thorrent's website, to Petri, to IT Dev Connections as well. Thank you very much for bringing your audience along. And for you folks out there that have been watching from those locations, hopefully you found today really useful. You've been entering the competitions and the prizes and all that kind of stuff all the way through. Tomorrow we have Matt McSpirit, one of my cohorts on the ops team. He's going to be taking you folks through all of the infrastructure stuff, including Nano Server, containers, and also Azure Stack. Pretty amazing kind
Azure
of things.
Stack.
Yeah, you're pretty jazzed about Azure Stack.
I really like this Azure Stack.
All right, settle down over there.
You know what? You can't shoot me anymore. So your weapons have been dethroned.
Yeah, you're out of shots. Oh, no, he's throwing the nine guys. Okay, we're out of here. Thank you very much. We will see you tomorrow.